Clukwan School will stay open next year. And a new report shows that the environmental impact statements for Alaska's five largest hard rock mines do not accurately predict spills. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Corinne Smith. Those stories are up next. The future of the Clukwan School was uncertain as enrollment dropped below the threshold for state funding last fall. But administrators with the regional Chatham School District say the school will stay open next year. Chatham School District administrators visited school staff and community of the Chilkat Indian Village of Clukwan April 5th and 6th after 2 years due to the pandemic. Clukwan Advisory School Board President Shauna Kinnison called the in-person visit productive.
To just have these three bodies all working together in like collaboration. And I had really high hopes for it, and it went, just exceeded my expectations. It was just wonderful.
Clukwan residents and the school community have had a challenging year. Last fall, enrollment dropped below 10 students, the threshold for state funding risking school closure. A head teacher backed out at the start of the year, and so they had a series of substitutes fill in. This spring, they hired a full-time teacher. And the Chatham superintendent, Bruce Houck, died unexpectedly in December. Clukwan officials say navigating these issues and the pandemic remotely with regional school administrators was especially difficult. Clukwan currently serves 9 students, grades kindergarten through 7th. On their visit, Chatham administrators assured Clukwan staff and community that the school will continue to stay open next year. Kinnison says the 2-day in-person visit was an important opportunity for in-depth discussions around the school's future.
All the staff members were involved, the village, the community, parents. It was just felt healing. And I think we're all on the same page.
Board President Elizabeth Hoogy and Goon-based board member Albert Kukesh III and Chatham Interim Superintendent John Holst made the visit to Clukwan. Here's Holst.
The day and a half or so that we spent with them showing us and telling us how important the school is to the students and the people that live in Clukwan. And they were very energetic about doing whatever they could to help to get the school back on sound footing.
Discussions also focused on cost-saving measures to facilities at the school site, staffing, and relaunching a preschool in Clukwan. Justina Hotch is a Clukwan educator and administrator of the STEPS program. Hotch says it was an opportunity to discuss more about Clukwan's unique educational programs, including Tlingit language and culture.
We have a Tlingit language teacher full-time with a 5-year grant, and the opportunities to really make this a place-based Tlingit language kind of magnet school. There isn't anywhere else in the community where kids can learn Tlingit language like here, and that's a real gift that we have.
She says that extends to traditional subsistence activities, science and outdoor education, and also involves members of the community as guest speakers and teachers. Clukwan Advisory School Board President Kinnison says she feels hopeful after the district administrator's visit.
And we feel supported, absolutely supported. They want us to keep going, and they're going to help us make it happen.
Through April, the district will work to finalize next year's budget, including administering over $700,000 in federal COVID relief funding to schools in Clukwan, Angoon, Gustavus, and Tenneke Springs. A new report shows that the environmental impact statements for Alaska's 5 largest hard rock mines grossly underestimate the number of spills that have resulted from those projects. KUAC's Dan Bros reports.
Seattle, Washington-based statistician Susan Lubetkin authored the Alaska Mining Spills Report.
I initially had the overall concept of doing a retrospective analysis about whether or not environmental impact statements do a good job of capturing environmental impacts.
Lubetkin says she focused in on mining and found support from Alaska groups for the investigation. Lubetkin says spill predictions included in the mine EISs were primarily based on modeling of trucking accidents.
And that's what I think gets missing in a lot of these EISs, is that by only looking at a single substance from a single source, i.e. diesel or concentrate from truck accidents, we're missing the really big picture.
Lubetkin says even when just looking at trucking accidents, the commonly used predictive model does not anticipate the spills which have occurred at the five Alaska mines.
Across the five mines in this report, you would have 4.3 trucking accidents between the inception of the mines till as far as they were going to run based on what was in their EISs. In practice, between 1995 and 2020, there were 114 trucking accidents across those five mines.
Lubetkin underscores that's a subset of more than 1,000 transportation-related mine spills and over 8,000 total releases of all types at the mines between 1995 and 2020. According to the report, they involved the release of 2.3 million gallons and 1.9 million pounds of hazardous materials.
We've got a number of extremely hazardous substances like anhydrous ammonia, formaldehyde, hydrogen cyanide, nitric acids, sodium cyanide, sulfuric acid that have all spilled at these various mines.
Lubetkin acknowledges that while the report illustrates poor predictive spill modeling and more incidents than expected, it does not detail their impacts.
How many of those spills reached the environment and how many didn't?
It is biased, and it is developed with, you know, a purposeful intent to highlight the number and the quantity of spills without any regard to what their actual environmental impact is.
Alaska Miners Association Executive Director Deantha Skibinski says focusing solely on numbers is misleading.
Even something that is in a, you know, secondary containment area, something that's under a gallon in size is being reported as a spill as if this is something that was a major media event and a major environmental catastrophe. That is what is being taken out of context in this report.
Skibinski says the AMA is still digesting the over 500-page report to develop a more thorough response to the issues it raises.
There's absolutely validity in looking at it, but you certainly have to look at the whole picture.
The report relies on a State Department of Environmental Conservation mining spill database, and in an emailed response to a request for comment, the DEC said, quote, "Unlike other states that set a minimum threshold, Alaska requires that all spills be reported to the Department of Environmental Conservation. It is important to look not just at the number of spills, but at their relative size and impact," unquote. The spill report, which also points to the need for greater scrutiny by government agencies, comes as Alaska weighs new mining development. Amber Vaska is Executive Director of Tribal Government and Client Services for the Tanana Chiefs Conference, one of the report's backers. TCC is fighting the state's proposed Ambler Mining Access Road, a project Vaska says the spill report has direct application to.
The Ambler Road permits did not consider mining. It should have been a consideration because the whole road is being built for mining. And this report just highlights that mining does need to be a part of it because spills are something that happens.
Mining Spills report author Lubetkin says although the report focused on anticipated versus actual spills at Alaska mines, its finding that the predictions are inaccurate has application for analysis of spill risks for mining projects elsewhere. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
For KHNS, I'm Corinne Smith. Thanks for joining us. You can listen to and read news stories on our website at khns.org. You can also subscribe to KHNS News on Spotify or anywhere you get your podcasts.